The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It doesn't get more intense than this moment.
Stand well back, everybody, because that is a different class from France.
Thomas Allen! How about that from the Italian inside half?
Maybe another kick from Ford. Little chip over the top. Where's this one bouncing? Oh, it's bouncing! England's way again!
McInally pounces! The opportunistic try from the former Scottish captain.
Sexton from outside the 10-metre line. It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton!
Here goes Thomas Williams, Chickering, charge for the line. Oh, it's the perfect start to the second half of Wales.
Has told it to burn, they have numbers on him. And to Andrew Conway! And in the ground he goes! Superb rugby from Ireland!
The 2021 Guinness Six Nations up and running. 14-man Ireland beaten in Cardiff yesterday, 21 points to 16. The Scots stole the show. At Twickenham, a first win at Twickenham for the first time since 1983, no less. As for the French, Anton Dupont and friends made very light work of the Italians. Seven tries scored, 50 points to 10. They come to Dublin feeling well rested and fresh. Brian O'Driscoll, evening.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Let's start in Cardiff. What a sickener.
Yeah, it was. On a few fronts, obviously, Test rugby at the best of times away from home in the Six Nations is hard with 15 men, and then you reduce yourself by one for 67 minutes of the contest. It makes it increasingly more challenging. So if you kind of look take the first section where it was a little bit of a slow start, and even though we had good possession, it felt as though probably the momentum, the early exchanges were with Wales. Although it was, a 3-point game by the time Peter O'Mahony got sent off. But then, you flip the remaining 67 minutes, and so many positives to take out of it on the back of, hard graft and spirited performance, individuals really stepping up. And Tadhg Furlong coming back, and forgotten what we've been missing with him. It was so exciting. We thought Andrew Porter had done a phenomenal job until you see the extra skill set that Furlong provides. So it's a sickener because we put ourselves in a position, first of all, to see the game out, and then we gave up some sloppy tries, but then not giving ourselves one final shot in the corner when we'd done all that hard graft is a real sickener and a pretty bitter pill for Andy Farrell to have to swallow with the knowledge that we've got an in-form France team coming to the Aviva Stadium this weekend.
Yes, and on my point about the French being fresh and well-rested by comparison with the Irish, who after yesterday, will have a lot of sore bodies. That was test match rugby and all its physicality laid bare. You've been through games akin to that. It's what, Wednesday, Thursday before you feel yourself again?
Yeah, and it obviously depends on how old the bones are as well, and what sort of mileage you've got on the clock as well. There'll be some guys, or indeed what position you're playing. You think about the likes of Cian Healy that must be in his 14th or 15th season. He put in a good 50-minute shift, so I'd only anticipate he's always been a bit of a freak athlete, but you'd have to imagine the cumulative effect of that much test rugby over 100 test matches is going to take effect on your recovery. On top of everything, everyone well knows that when you win a game, the body never feels quite as bad as when you lose one. So the recovery becomes more important now, but more difficult at the same time, more challenging because of the mood in the camp, because of the disappointment in the camp. On the flip side, whenever you win a game, your coach is always trying to keep you in check as the things you can improve on. I think Andy Farrell will be flipping that and talking about, in this loss, so many good things were done. And so many, you know, people really put their hand up and put in, turned out some really impressive individual performances. I think you have to remember as well with Test rugby, you know, when you lose someone for 67 minutes, it's one of your main operators at line-out time, both for and opposition ball. He's our go-to guy. You know, when it comes to rucking, he's one of our best jacklers of the ball. And every launch play that you have, it means you have to put one of your backs in to make sure you win the scrum. So it completely negates your ability to attack off set piece, which is a huge component of what Ireland have done for the last number of years. So straight away, you're eating into some of your quality platforms to be able to deliver some success. So yeah, you know, very disappointing because it's a result-based business, but it was there for the taking, considering, you know, the tries that they offered up.
Yeah, and maybe damning of Wales as well, that against 14 men for 70 minutes, they didn't tear us open a bit more. For instance, Ron Nogara said 15-man Ireland beat Wales by 10. What's your take, in so much as we can be sure?
Yeah, I think once that initial chess match had happened, I do feel as though Ireland are playing their way into the game. We know that they're a possession-based team. They still had huge possession. I didn't see the end of the game possession, but it was over 60% in the first half with one less man. So, you know that that's going to, you know, that's a hallmark of Irish teams these days. So I do feel as though with you know, Peter O'Mahony on the pitch for 80 minutes, that you'd have to have fancied Ireland. Think about that extra body in the defensive line, the extra spacings, the extra, you know, occasional turnover or nuisance in the ruck. All of those aspects add up to the end result. And I think what's so hard is when they reflect on it and look at that game, you think about that George North try that was against the run of play from Ireland trying to play maybe a bit of a loose offload from Gary Ringrose, and then compounded issue with Conor Murray not just trying to kill the ball and offload to Ian Henderson, who then also knocks it on. Mm. And two phases later, out of nowhere, with a penalty advantage, George North is running in for a pretty easy try. That's a real sickener. That takes the wind out of your sails. And it was kind of against the run of play too. And when you've done all that work in the build-up to it for, I don't know what time that was, but for 50, 55, 60 minutes and the momentum's with you, that can be such a swinger. And it ends up being, because Wales then got their tails up.
The defining moment of the match on 13 minutes, Peter O'Mahony's red card. You have cleared out your fair share of rooks. Talk us through his and then your perspective on the whole thing, watching from afar. But he's trying to lay down a marker.
Yeah, like trying to get into Pete's head. You know, he's a physical player, uncompromising. You know, Tom France has made a tackle and then he's sort of floating around the ruck, trying to be a bit of a nuisance. I think Pete's probably just trying to tell him that if you do that again, you're gonna know about it. The problem is he stepped beyond the line, and we know now that any head collisions, also the manner in which his arm is cocked as well, makes it a kind of a double negative. If he's got it in a position where it looks like a genuine clear out, it might just be perceived as being, you know, mistimed or misplaced, whereas it looks as though there's a bit of intent, you know, with it, unfortunately, and Pete can't have any issues with being red carded. You know, once you saw the initial replay, it was clear as day. And very disappointing from his perspective, from Ireland's perspective. We also have to deal now with no Peter O'Mahony for certainly the next couple of games. And it's, you know, it must be hard. I've never been sent off in my career, but it must be hard watching as your team play their way back into it, but then lose it kind of towards in the last quarter, when you know that your efforts would have been rewarding to the team. So it's a real sickener from the collective and from the individual perspective.
Yeah, I'm sure he's in the absolute horrors looking back on it. Wayne Barnes talked about it being high, about it being dangerous, and he mentioned the chicken wing, the arm cocked, as you said. What's the logic of the arm cocked?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know. It's Again, you're trying to get into, you know, Pete's head with it. He was just trying to come in and obviously, I'm sure there was no intent with trying to actually hit him in the head. But when you're doing that and trying to be excessively physical, you have to make sure that you get your timing right and you get your point of contact right. And it's It's non-negotiable anymore, and that they're the situation, particularly when you've got time coming into the ruck. That wasn't a kind of a snap decision. He had a lead into it, and he was able to target Francis, but he got it wrong and paid the price.
Mm. So how would you have had your arm going into a ruck generally?
In a perfect world, you have it, you know, up by your side, as if it's almost like you're going into to make a tackle as well. Yeah. If you have it in a tackling position, you stand some sort of chance, because technically you're meant to be grasping onto the individual to try and drive them through. It's not just a collision base of, and we see it in rucks the whole time, players fly in and just, you know, using their shoulder. We saw actually a brilliant clear out. So it was on the letter of the law, the question marks, the legitimacy of it from Kian Healy for the Burn try. But when Ken Owens came in, slid in illegally, and Kian Healy came in, and I don't think his arm was cocked, but he came in and just shoulder barged him out of it. A phenomenal clear out, something that's never going to get picked up on. But on the ruling and the technicality, you're meant to bind onto the individual rather than, you know, just using shoulder barge. So it's that nuance of the game that World Rugby are still trying to work out, because we've seen sendings off in the past. We saw one of the Barrett brothers getting sent off for a head collision on Michael Hooper. Was it not this year's Super Championship, but the previous year? And it's a really tough one, because when someone leads with their head close to the line, what are you meant to do? Now that was, again, adjudicated as a red card, and rightly so, but Pete can't have any problems with his one. It was one of the more clear red cards. And I don't know what he said to Wayne Barnes coming off, but he just couldn't have had any complaints. And on reflection, he'll absolutely agree with the referee's decision.
Mm. Ireland gave away four penalties in the first 13 minutes. Three of them were courtesy of Peter O'Mahony, and he was sent off against Scarlets in October. He got two yellow cards. There was an off-the-ball tackle, and then he went into the ruck with the shoulder again against Scarlets. So that's a bit of a trend. I mean, if he was 22, we'd be saying, look, he'll get to grips with what he can do and what he can't do. But he's 32 years of age, and we saw him fired up before kickoff. He's a leader in that way. But there's a point where if in 13 minutes you're giving away four penalties, getting a red card, and you've already been sent off this season, you probably have to have a sit down and a think about things and reflect on finding a better balance.
Yeah, well, he's obviously getting he's channeling that aggression in a negative way in those situations. The yellow card or the red card earlier on the season, you know, that one of the yellow cards might have been perceived as being a little bit soft. The second one definitely wasn't. And this is as blatant a red card as you're likely to get. There's very few people, even on social media, trying to put up a case for him. I think I saw one individual saying that's only a yellow card. I don't know what world that's a yellow card, and certainly not this one that we play in anymore. And we talk about protecting players and duty of care to players, particularly when they're in uncompromising positions, whether they're legal or not, or whether they're trying to be a nuisance. You can't take the law into your own hand. You can hurt them, but you got to hurt them legally and remind them that that's not the place that they can be. And sometimes that target isn't there. Sometimes you can't get that shot on their body, so you got to let it go and wait for the next opportunity when they're, you know, lying somewhere illegally, to make sure you hit them somewhere below their shoulder line. Try and get a good shot into, you know, ribs or something, where they leave themselves open, and just to let them know. And actually, there was some verbals afterwards. I was watching Pete. You know, we had a little word to Thomas Francis as well about, you know, don't do that again. You get away from our ruck ball. But it must have been something that he looked up and smiled and thought, you're in trouble here anyway. I don't know what the verbals are about.
Well, he appealed straight away to Barnes. Barnes, interestingly, said, no, unavoidable. But then the replay did Peter O'Mahony no favours.
Why, we have TMOs, right? You know, sometimes referees want to see the best case scenario. And that's why we got another set of eyes where they're able to pick the referee up on you know, little things that they've missed. That's why we have four referees ultimately, the two assistants, the man in charge, but also that set of eyes to be able to let the game carry on, but to pull the ref up on foul play. And so I think they dealt with it really well. It's okay. I'm okay with Wayne Barnes thinking that it was incorrect. Referees won't get every collision right. And particularly they're trying to speed up the the pace of the game. So that's why he's got a second set of eyes in a booth somewhere to go, no, hang on, let's come back to that. It's a pity he didn't come back to the Johnny Williams one a little bit later on, but I don't think that was a red card, I have to say.
What was that, yellow?
You know what? I don't think you could properly guarantee that that was a collision direct to Gary Ringrose's head from the angles that we saw. I think he had this massive head jolt, but on the angle that we saw, even in slow-mo, the one from behind Gary Ringrose, you see his head shooting back, but you can't technically see the point of contact. Now, the point of contact is, first of all, on the jaw, it's a red card. I don't think there's the mitigation of body height is any good, or, you know, late change of direction. I think a very generous referee might consider one of those two and give a yellow card. But I think it's impossible on the basis of the angles that we saw. I'm sure there were other angles that the referee or the TMO never called on, and maybe he saw them and decided to there was no case to answer. But it looked really bad, and it felt as though it warranted a kind of a minute of viewing to make sure that if you're going to be sending Pete off for his incident, that we get all decisions correct. So I don't know whether there's going to be anything that will come of that, but again, like I said, on the footage that we saw, you couldn't guarantee anything.
Suddenly then Ireland are down to 14 men, they're 6-0 down, and I think everybody feared the worst. And suddenly then at the break, Ireland are leading by 7, and they've obviously done a lot of good things across the remaining 70-odd plus minutes of this match, and you mentioned lots of positives. So why don't we delve into that? What did Ireland do well in this game? Why are we slightly, not buoyed, but we're certainly not down in the dumps about this defeat?
Well, I think first of all, you think about who's played really well for Ireland, who's been standout performers for Ireland consistently over the last, during the Andy Farrell tenure. And I don't know if you could pick an individual out that's been consistently very, very good over the last year. But I think what you have seen in the last three or four games is the likes of Hugo Keenan, who's come in for his first cap against Italy at the end of last year's Six Nations. And I was first start at full back. I thought he had a very, very good game. It felt as though he's the security that you want at full back. I think, I was calling for him to play there while Stockdale was playing there in the November internationals. It just feels as though Jacob Stockdale's the perfect fit for the wing and Hugo Keenan's the perfect fit for full back. He didn't do everything perfectly. He missed, one high ball, spilled a pass and didn't have the vision to be able to miss Larmour once towards the end of the game where, a pass over the top with Wales pressing hard, could have been a line break and could have led to an opportunity to score when we really needed one. So there's some things that in his game that will need a little bit of ironing out, but his last-ditch tackling, his reading of the game, his ability to work into space to create overlaps, those sort of things, were a real point of difference. So, he's won, real positive. Tyke Byrne in the second row, I thought, had a really, really positive game from clearing rooks out on his own, single man success at rook time when there was the potential for being turned over from being a nuisance at the rook, carried very well. We've accused him in the past of kind of going vanishing in games where he dips in and out. I thought it was a very complete performance across the board. Very harsh penalty given against him. Ultimately, the one that cost Ireland the game, because that was the 5-point differential then where they had to go to the corner. I thought Wayne Barnes just. What I can't exactly remember what he said today when I was looking back, but it was something. It was the tackle zone. I was like, well, I've never heard that before. I actually contacted another referee that I know, and I inquired about it, and that referee said, no, that's play on. Again, I'm not here to point fingers at Wayne Barnes. I think Wayne Barnes did a good job, and he is a good referee, but I think he got that wrong. I think the point of where that ball is placed, first man is entitled to go in and play it, provided he doesn't play the scrum half. Yeah. And that's what he did. And I thought he got a little bit whistle happy on that one. And that was the difference, because yeah, Ireland could have kicked that final penalty and it would have been a 2-point game up to then. So Yeah, it's, you know, there's two individuals, but also just the grittiness, just the willingness to stay in the fight, the ability to hold possession when you're an extra man down. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. And at times did we kind of run around without creating a huge amount. But you know, we know that that's what Ireland do an awful lot of the time. We kind of haven't been given creating great chances for our wide men, you know, giving them time with the, you know, with ball in hand in the open spaces. We just haven't done that. But we are kind of grinding teams down and forcing them into penalties and forcing them into errors. And then, you know, the occasional moment of magic, you know, brilliant. I should really make reference to Robbie Henshaw's performance as well. He's in the form of his life.
That's about me, as well as, you know, he's Ireland, for Ireland ever, isn't it?
For me, Ireland's man of the match, definitely. Yeah. Even though I mentioned, you know, Keenan and Byrne, I think Henshaw is in outstanding form on both sides of the ball. So physical with George North coming, running into his channel, and, you know, won so many of those collisions. But his ability to, you know, to get Ireland the hard yards, running to soft shoulders, getting an extra meter or two, something that James Ryan does in close quarters, of just trying to get the opposition on the back foot. And he did that time and time again. And then the creation of the try for Byrne. Actually, it was a beautiful little blocker line that that Porter ran. He was the one that kind of stood in the way of Wyn Jones, who should have been the insurance policy for Tipperick on the inside. But Porter blocked him off, and that's why Henshaw got through. Beautiful offload, and brilliant from Van der Fleer not to go reach and get him. White line fever, and then Byrne nearly spilled it, but a great try. So, you know, those small little individual moments, that mental toughness of hanging in there, not feeling sorry for yourself, and digging in, you know, right to the death. And it could have been on another day, you could have found a 5 meter line out and one where at least we could have gotten a draw and potentially a kick to win the Six Nations match against the odds.
You mentioned your frustration with the first try, you know, the turnover, the Ringrose offload. The second try felt just as soft. So to what extent is James Lowe culpable in the final moments of that?
Yeah, he is. I guess the communication, he certainly is in part. I wouldn't put the whole blame on him. But looking back on the visuals, what's the communication like? What's the expectation as to, you know, are they looking at playing man on? Are they looking to drift? I just felt as though he kind of got caught ball watching a little bit. And Gary Ringrose looked as though he had George North one-on-one pretty securely. As a result, Lowe should have been just pushing out onto Lee Halfpenny. And as it happened, Lowe went in on North, got it away to Halfpenny. Keenan had to make that read and push it out to and the pass got pushed out to Rhys Ammett and Tadhg Furlong couldn't get across in the corner. It's something that James Lowe has probably struggled with in his years in Ireland, understanding his defensive reads. We know how capable he is with ball going forward. He offers something very different to everybody else, but he is prone to the occasional error. He had one early on in the game where Tipperick kind of played him a little bit and pulled him out of the line and threw a pass in behind him. And thankfully the scramble defense managed to make up for him that time. But this one will hurt, and you know, it'll be a difficult video session today for him watching and realizing that his man was the guy that threw the final pass and not the one that threw the penultimate pass.
Yeah, maybe you get away with it that bit more at club level. The worry might be it wasn't the most complicated picture for James Lowe there, you know, and a test rugby, you get exposed. Larmer came on, seemed to do okay. Like Keith Earls didn't have his greatest day either, a few high profile mistakes. Will Earls and Lowe be slightly twitchy as they wait to hear the team announcement with Larmer there? How would you see that going, or how would you like that to go?
I would think so. You know, I'm a huge Keith Earls fan. I played with him for a number of years and always have had huge respect for him, but it certainly wasn't his best outing in an Irish jersey. He never properly got going. He looked a small bit tentative on that drop ball. The Rhys Ammett try was the one that the possession that Wales got came from his error, where we won a line out against the head and he kicked it direct into touch, having been taken over our 22. So you know, there are little X's against Keith Earl's name. Sometimes the game goes for you, other times it doesn't. And it just wasn't his game. And I'm not surprised that Larmour came on for a little bit of spark. He looked very sharp and looked as though he could create real problems with his footwork. So I'd anticipate, you know, I'd be surprised to see the same back three again. When you have two wingers that, you know, have had some good moments, but, you know, some pretty average moments as well. And you've got the quality of Larmour and other wingers, you know, waiting in the wings, you'd have to anticipate that there's a chance of some change in that back three. All right. I'm not sure what it is yet. Keith Earls has got a lot of credit in the bank with some of his performances. James Lowe is new to the setup. But you would think that with what Larmour can bring and the X factor that perhaps at times we're missing this weekend, you got to get those guys on the park. And Larmour's definitely very exciting going forward. Again, you know, not much asked of him going back, but I think he's very likely to be a starter this weekend.
A point in Ireland in general play, at times it looked to be very good and they were making great progress. And then other times, I know even just from getting to watch the game alongside a Shane Jennings, it's interesting what you pick up, stuff I wouldn't necessarily spot. There were, you know, a few times where he's muttering to himself about the zigzag play, which is, you know, what it says in the tin, where Ireland middle third to somewhere into the Welsh half, and it'll be carry into contact, Murray will go back the way they came from, carry into contact, Murray will go back again the way they came from. It's zigzag, it's what it says in the tin, as opposed to constantly, you know, diagonally making progress up the pitch, around the corner, around the corner.
It's been a hallmark of this, you know, Mike Catton and Andy Farrell's game plan for the last while.
To finish my point, Shane Jennings said, I said, so what's the logic? He said, I do not get it. He remembered doing it once in his life against Argentina in 2007 before the World Cup because Eddie O'Sullivan didn't want to give him the game plan. And he said, in effect, he'd make a carry, get smashed, and they'd zig back the other way, and then he'd have got back to his feet, and the defender in front of him had come back to his feet, and they'd say, right, same again. And they just run into each other again, and you went nowhere, and then it might be a Murray box kick. So he felt when Ireland went away from that, it was so much better. So, I know you've talked about the zigzag before.
That only really works. The zigzag only works when you've actually tired teams around the corner. Okay. And Ireland haven't been doing that. I think I don't know why they're going back there. That's a defensive team's dream. And you have these different plays where you might have a launch off scrum or line out, you know, on the extremity, and you might hit up and you might go around the corner, and it's called a 21 phase or a 21 play where you hit twice one way and then sweep down the other, or you might have a 31 or a 41. Mm-hmm. But what's happening on occasion is they might have a 21-1-1-1 and they're coming back, and it makes life so much easier. If you think about it from a defensive point of view, if you've just had a collision, and it's taken the wind out of your sails, the hardest thing to do is get up on your feet and then keep on moving and recovering while you're on the go. The easiest thing to do is to recover, stand there and wait for someone to come running back down your channel. We used to do a fitness drill, which I hated. It was a continuous fitness drill called the 7-minute drill. And it was goal line to 40 meter line. And then you had to, in 6 or 7 seconds, and then you had to recover for 13 seconds by running 20 meters across, on the far side of the post, and then run into the try line. So it was just this constant movement piece. The easy thing to do from a recovery point of view is put your hands on your knees or stand in one place. The hard thing is to recover while on the move, because it's still taking some energy out of you. You're having to think about it. You look at the success of the Welsh team under Warren Gatland. They were all about keep on going team, a cog team, same way, exhaust the opposition. And then opportunities open up later on in the game to strike down the blind side. I think you're just playing into the opposition's hands. And it's not to say that, some little variances and some little nuances that Ireland have had in doing that, they've had a little bit of success, but it's been the exception to the rule for me. And I think if you're looking at them, you think, don't worry, lads, don't overfold, whatever you do, because, mirror what you're seeing, from the opposition forwards, or watch where Johnny Sexton is, because so much goes through him. And I just think they're playing into the defensive side's hands and need to look at trying to outwork them a little bit more.
Okay, very interesting. We'll watch out for that in the coming weeks. You mentioned Johnny Sexton. Let's assume for a second he's not available. Billy Burns, the kick looms large. Could you assess his 10, 15 minutes, all his minutes on the pitch for us? Because we saw the kick, we know he didn't mean it, and it was a bad moment, very bad moment. But Andy Farrell and Paul O'Connell and Mike Catt are going to have to chat about his overall contribution as well here. What did you see from Burns?
Yeah, so first of all, let's take the kick aside. You know, he'll be filthy with himself for, you know, biting off more than he could chew. And yes, you know, I think they were making all the right noises that, you know, Johnny Sexton defended him and said that, you know, sometimes you're the hero, sometimes you're the villain. You know, it's painful because that's the game. And, you know, if he kicks it 10 metres out, that's not the end of the world. The end of the world is kicking it dead, unfortunately. And it's a pretty bitter pill for him to swallow. I looked at his overall game, and I guess it's a bit inconclusive, to be honest with you. There's a couple of factors here. I think if you look at bigger picture and now the necessity to start viewing Rugby World Cup 2023, we have to understand, first of all, is Johnny Sexton going to be the out half at Rugby World Cup 2023? And that's a decision that Andy Farrell has to decide himself. If he feels he is, well, you know, Johnny's going to continue in the vein he's in at the moment. If he's not, he's going to have to start some other 10s. And at the moment, Joey Carberry, you would anticipate, is the heir to the throne. Billy Burns and Ross Byrne have been in the mix. Jack Carty is on the extremities. Ben Healy and Harry Byrne are, you know, potentially the future. So I wouldn't say, comparatively to what we've had in the last 20 years, we've got an embarrassment of riches in the 10 jersey compared to what we're used to. So we're going to have to decide that the likes of Billy Burns or Ross Byrne or Carty need to start games if they're going to be the guy that is going to be wearing the 10 jersey in France in 2.5 years. So giving little cameos going forward, you know, 10, 15 minutes, you know, cumulatively, you might see someone that has 25, 30 caps coming to that World Cup as an out half, but cumulatively, minutes wise, it might be significantly less than you would anticipate for someone with that number of test matches. That's not going to work for Ireland. They're going to have to nail their colours to a mast. So Billy Burns was the guy that got the opportunity the weekend. I don't know, was it his fourth or fifth cap? Came on for Robbie Henshaw, first of all, made a couple of tackles in those 3 or 4 minutes that he was on for the HIA, thought he did quite well. And then he came on for Johnny, who looked worse for wear, to be honest with you. I, you know, seeing him, he looked narkier than he usually is. I don't know what he was actually angry about, because it was definitely an accidental knee that caught him. But he, you know, you would have to anticipate with Johnny, even if he does play, he's not going to train till later on in the week. So let's pull it back to Billy Burns for his 11 minutes that he was, sorry, it was 14 minutes that he was on, 69 with three minutes injury time. He had 23 moments, I counted, 6 of them neutral, just basic passes, and you know, neither majorly negative or positive, something that you bog standard that you would anticipate. He had 11 positive moments, so had a really, you know, positive impact on the game, be it, you know, a good kick penalty to the corner, kicking goals, little line break, or being the key support player in a ruck or clear out in a ruck. But the issue for me is in a 13 or 14 minute segment, if you have 6 negative moments in a short window like that, you're coming in there to not just try and plug a hole, but to make a difference and to chase the game. And I don't think a coach can look at you and think there's significant issues that you know may have led to opportunities being lost. And when I look at that, it's, you know, test match rugby is fast, and his initial moment coming coming on the field had a brilliant carry from a midfield scrum. We made 30 meters. That was one of Ireland's best sequence of play. I think there were 3 carries thereafter, and then they created a 4-on-3 right about 5 or 6 meters out from the line. And now his job as first receiver on a 4-on-3 is to leave his teammates with a 3-on-2. Mm-hmm. He sticked the first man. He wasn't helped by Gary Ringrose crabbing a little bit, but even still, it was still available. But he ran across the field a little bit and ate up into space, and the Welsh defence was able to press off and push out. So that was the first error. There was another one where, you know, there was penalty advantage and he took a bit of a freebie, kicked the ball away. It got deflected and it almost worked out, but it was a poor quality kick. But the big ones for me was, you know, kicking the ball dead from when it looked as though it could have been kept in hand. I know that Johnny Sexton, you know, probably didn't have, you know, his best ever game, but and he had one or two of those errors. But key moments with 6 or 7 minutes on the clock, you've got to, you know, keep the pressure on, keep them squeezed with, you know, with the momentum and keep the ball in hand where possible. And then the big ones, obviously, the end of the game. But there was one other aspect where he threw a pass when Gary Ringrose made a brilliant break up the right hand side. Great clear out from Ian Henderson, who I also thought had a great game. Tyke Byrne linked back to Burns, and he threw a pass behind James Lowe and in front of Robbie Henshaw. Now, that is a brilliant try-scoring opportunity. You've got Jordan Larmour outside Robbie Henshaw, you've got Keenan outside, and you've got CJ Stander out on the wing. And Wales are scant with their defence. They have been chased back. They've just retreated massively 30 or 40 metres after the line break, and they're in major trouble. That has to go to hand. And, you know, those sort of moments leave indelible marks on coaches. I think that that's the reason that someone like Jack Carty isn't in the setup, is because of what happened to Japan a year and a half ago in the World Cup, where ultimately we fell short and he was the guy, at the helm. And I think those moments, coaches don't forget them. And when you really need to provide for them and deliver for them and it doesn't happen, I think that just, that builds a case against you. So unfortunately for Billy, you know, I do think he's a nice player, but I guess it just feels like, you know, there's a big ceiling to where, you know, we need to get from a commanding number 10 for the next World Cup. And I'm just not entirely sure that Billy Burns is the guy. He's only gotten 4 caps, I understand that. And international rugby is very different than European rugby and club rugby, and he will need time. But it does feel as though there's other guys that are, you know, on the periphery that perhaps have a better opportunity of getting to a higher ceiling.
And so I saw on Twitter as well, you sounded the Harry Byrne klaxon.
Yeah, and listen, I've been banging that drum for a while, and I understand people from different parts of the country are going to promote their own. People from Munster will talk about Ben Healy. You know, Billy Burns being, you know, defended by you know, Ulster fans. Jack Carty's been, people are wondering, what does he have to do with his performances in Connacht? I get it. You want your own in there. And this isn't a Leinster piece. This is a capability piece. And I think that Harry Byrne is able to do something that none of the other 10s, including Joey Carberry, consistently can do, and that's attack the ball. An ability to take a step into the ball, and it doesn't happen every time you get it, because sometimes you got to catch and deliver and just get it to the extremities. But his ability to be able to hit the ball and sit down the defence on the inside and stop that positive knock-on effect to the defence of being able to know who exactly they're going to have has such a bearing on what happens wide out. And as an outside centre, if my out half, you know, crabs across and just shovels the ball on, I have to do something way more to create my own space rather than him creating it for me. And Harry Byrne has been able to do that. I've never seen him train. I've only seen him on TV, but it's very evident that he's able to do something different than most other 10s. You see it in George Ford. You see it in Finn Russell. You see it in Johnny Sexton. These guys attack the ball and they create space by their generosity of being willing to be hit on the line as well, but also the ability to be able to flash a pass when they do step into it. It's easier to drift with a pass and pass to where your shoulders are aiming. That's a much easier thing to do. It also kind of shows a little bit of nervousness. There was times in my career when I was low on confidence that I would have passed the ball like that. But the really great guys are able to attack it straight and create the numbers on the outside. That the 4-on-3 was a perfect example of that. He hit that inside shoulder, delivered it to Kerry Ringrose. He did the same. Keenan did the same. That's a try in the corner. And there the difference is at international level. You might get away with a little bit more at club level. You don't get away with it at international level. And that's why, you know, maybe it's time to have a go with Harry Byrne. Yeah, maybe he's not there yet, but I know a few lads that, you know, got capped before they played internationally. James Ryan was one, Michael Bent another, and I was lucky 25 years ago to be in a similar boat. So, it sometimes it's a case of sink or swim, and I know that he has the potential to swim.
Yes. Look, Jalibert even capped by France after 15 games for Bordeaux. It does happen. So that quality to hit the pass as opposed to crab across is what you really see in Byrne, is okay, that separates him from the chasing pack behind Johnny. None of the rest are really doing that the way Byrne can.
Not consistently the same way. Some of them do it on occasion, and I like Joey Carberry as a player. I think he's a fabulous player. In fact, he's probably not your stereotypical 10. I think in a perfect world, if we had a number of 10s, he'd be playing in the center, would be playing at 15. Because he's kind of a real heads-up player. But now, through necessity, it looks as though we're going to be playing him in the 10 position. Sometimes he does that, but not he doesn't have that same capability each time of straightening the line, of hitting that first pass, and then throwing, whipping balls out to, the next runner or miss passes that create the space. And visually, as a 13, when I watch the opposition 10 doing that, straight away, subconsciously, you turn your shoulders in a little bit because you think it's all going to be a little bit tighter. If he's hitting it back in, well, everyone's going to have to move back in a little bit. And your subconscious is to turn in a fraction. And that's what creates the space in the 15 and 20 meter channels. So, even though he might have been playing against softer opposition, Harry Byrne has done that repetitively. And that's why I'm excited about him. I just feel as though he's got capabilities of doing things that I think are unique to a certain amount of players. And maybe we just need to delve in and have a go and certainly just get him into camp. I haven't seen enough of Ben Healy to have a full appreciation for him, but it feels as though he's another guy that has that capability. We'll have to wait and see, because it's not coming to crunch time just yet, but it's going to get to decision time soon, where, France, Vintimac, Jalibert and Carbonell, who are we going to have in 2.5 years' time?
Well, Andy Farrell has 25 matches to play with. I mean, it sounds like it's a long time away, but if you're talking about getting 20, 30 caps, good caps into and out half, Andy Farrell...
Starting caps, as well. They've got to start matches. The game.
Okay.
Yeah, start the game, or certainly get half matches or 30 minutes. You can't be getting 10 minutes at the end of a game. How do you build any confidence? How do you build any kind of reservoir of know-how in Test rugby with intermittent segments here and there, sporadically, thrown over the course of a year? It's very, very difficult to do. You've got to have an ability to play, with time in the jersey, and that's how you learn through experience. And if Billy Byrne is the guy, I think he'll get better. But and at the moment, he's probably the guy behind Johnny Sexton. I do think he's there right now, but I think Harry Byrne definitely has the capability of getting to a higher level than him.
Okay, lots of food for thought there. A short break and then final thoughts from Brian O'Driscoll to come.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Yes, you're welcome back. Brian O'Driscoll with us. Rugby and Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone. Hashtag team of us, everyone in. Can I, because Clark has gone crazy against us, and that was a good, dense conversation. Can you give me a line on, breakdown and line out? We'll call it the Paul O'Connell section. Literally just a quick summary line.
Yeah, breakdown looked pretty good. I think there was times that we were sending too many numbers still, and the problem is that you don't have any opposition players in the ruck, or you have one player trying to be a nuisance. And a few times I saw five guys go into rucks. That's a killer.
Okay.
So they've got to work on their ruck identification a little bit better. But on the flip side of that, I talked about earlier about that Gary Ringrose break up the touchline towards the end. Ian Henderson went and won that ruck when he was when Ringrose was massively vulnerable on his own on the ground, and Faletau was looking to pilfer, and so was Tipperick, and Henderson went and cleared the ruck out on his own, absolutely smashed it. And if you can start winning rooks with one player or two players, the positive knock-on effect to the rest of your game is so significant. We have to stop burning players insignificantly and coming up kind of being, ultimately ending up being rook watchers, leaning in and creating these caterpillar rooks or not having any effect on it. You have to have an ability as a player to run to a rook, realize I'm here, but I'm not meant to be here. Get out and reload for the next phase. You're not going to have an input in the subsequent phase, but the phase thereafter, you can have a positive impact and have organization before the ball comes to you. So we've got to just get a little bit clearer on that side of things, but that'll come with Paul O'Connell as well. Hard to ask too much in 1 week.
Yeah. Stole three lineouts.
And without Peter O'Mahony, right? So probably one of our most proficient, you know, operators in the line, you know how difficult it is to win the ball, even at two against him, you know, his ability and speed and reaction time. So not having him for the vast majority of the game would have inhibited our defensive line out as well as our own attacking options. So, pretty impressive. That'll get progressively better as well. We also didn't have James Ryan for the vast majority of the game, who would have been training for the whole week. So for Henderson to come in, and for Tadhg Byrne, who probably isn't, you know, notorious for his line-out capabilities, I think we did quite well in that area. And with one less person, it means lifts are going to be different. You're having to call six-man options. They're going to have, you know, an additional player out, which means you're going to have greater line speed and everything. The knock-on effect to losing one of your forwards is vast. Mm. And that's why I think we did extremely well. People will be looking, going, oh, well, it's another loss. But it was the manner in which we lost, that there was no throwing the towel in, that we took the game to Wales. And ultimately, you know, if you take away silly tries, leaked tries,
yes,
you know, it felt as though we were a better team than them.
Yeah, no, the tries were killer. And they won't get any better with more viewings across the week. So with the French coming to town then, they looked very good against Italy. I mean, just efficient and picked up where they left off last year. And DuPont, you know, keeps living up to his billing. So are France slight favourites coming to Dublin now on the basis of weekend one?
Yeah, I think they probably are. I think, you know, for so many years now, for over a decade, I would say that France coming to Ireland, we wouldn't have been overly fearful of it. It just felt as though we were, you know, we would grind out a victory where, you know, it certainly wasn't the French team of the noughties, you know, the Josians and the Poitrinos and the Palouses, that wasn't in existence, you know, for the last 10 years. Whereas all of a sudden, they're kind of cock of the walk again. I also think they've got serious X factor again. You look at Teddy Thomas, Villiers on the wings, you know, you're talking about Damien Penaud even sitting on the bench. That's without any Vakatawa. You look at what the amount of these tries, those trail runner tries that Antoine Dupont is going to pick up over the course of this year's Six Nations and subsequent years is scary.
Can I ask you about that for a second? Because that's going to become a big talking point this week. So in a game like football, for instance, a Dupont type run, you would have someone track him. You a midfielder, if it was someone running from deep like that, someone would know Dupont's coming and it's someone's job to track him, maybe nearest man or detail someone to effectively man mark him. To translate that parallel to rugby, I mean, the scary prospect on Sunday is France make a breakaway and you're just thinking, where's Dupont? So in rugby terms, what will be said about those Dupont trail runs?
There's nothing you can do.
Oh,
there's
good. Okay.
Because once they're in possession of the ball, you know, that's the line that good scrum halves take. You play ahead of the ball, so ultimately you're in an offside position.
Yeah.
But you're only offside if you get the ball. So you know, if he plays ahead of the game and on the basis that he's preempting that there's going to be a line break every time that France go wide. So when he's running to the next ruck, he's playing ahead, 2-3 meters ahead of where the ball is, because it's much easier for him to duck back in and when a ruck is created and play from there, because he'll have a second or two play time to get there. But in the situations where there is a line break, well, that's where he's primed in the best position. And it's, you can't have someone coming, tracking across, looking at him. You can't pull people out of the defensive line going, well, he might get the ball.
Yeah.
Because you're worried about ball focus first, who the guy that has the ball, not the guy that's going to get the ball. Mm. And once the line break is made and the lines of running that he chooses, it's almost undefendable. Right. You can only have great tracking across from your blind winger or from the far edge of the defensive line if you know they identify it. But for the most part, those opportunities are always going to be there. That they're there for any scrum half. It just seems as though he runs that line better than most. Mm. And it's not just I think it would be really interesting for people to watch the amount of times he runs it without getting the ball.
Mm, okay.
See it for the tries. Yeah. A bit like Chris Ashton with the amount of tries that he scores, or Doug Howlett, the amount of tries he scored, the amount of times they ran the line when they didn't get the ball, but were patient, and it might take 7 or 8 goes to get there, but you continually run it and eventually you get the pass. Mm. Well, that's Dupont. He runs it every single time and waits for that line break. And when you've got the X factor of Thomas and Vakatawa and Gael Ficou and all these, even Arthur Vincent, Bryce Doolan back in brilliant form, like they've got line breakers everywhere, guys that are capable of getting the offload away. And that's where it's bread and butter to him. So He's going to score more of those tries. That's the reality of it, because they're going to create more line breaks.
Okay. We'll talk more about that game across the week. A brief word then on England, Scotland, 1983 and all that. As the game progressed, suddenly the injury list for England, Macko and Tuilagi and Sinclair and Launchbury and Joe Marler and Underhill as well, suddenly you realise that had been maybe dismissed too easily during the week, and the Saracens boys pitched up and to varying degrees were really undercooked. The thing which I wanted to ask you about here was, so Scotland seemed to be brilliant, particularly 2019 Dublin, the dominant tackles count became a big talking point with England-Ireland, and it seems like we came out on the wrong side of that. Well, in every game since, you wouldn't class Scotland as a massive team. They seem to be winning the contact against England. I mean, the great bulliers of the Six Nations. Why was that happening?
I think some of the personnel that you mentioned missing, I think, Sam Underhill is a massive component to their team. You take Kyle Sinclair out and put, was it Will Stewart was the one that started at the weekend. They're different beasts as well. They're less aggressive, less physical, less uncompromising. So there's two individuals. And then on top of it, you put, three Saracens forwards in there. Itoje, had a decent enough game. George looked off the pace. Billy Vunipola looked as though he was carrying weight. So straight away, there's five of your pack that are, or your starting pack that ordinarily aren't playing or aren't in good shape or in good form. So, and then you flip that with the intent that Scotland nearly always have. Mm. They start out a million miles an hour, more often than not in Murrayfield than anywhere else. But sometimes away from home, they come at you. And it's about weathering the storm. But when they get their tails up, they are the most difficult team to chase, because they get hungrier and hungrier and more vicious. And they just had a phenomenal physical display. Mm. I thought they just were collision winners, bodies on the line. Hamish Watson was amazing. Richie was really good. Johnny Gray, who I have to say I've been a bit of a skeptic about some of his stats. We saw the Pro 14 stats of not missing a tackle a couple of years ago, but I can't remember any massively dominant tackles. I have to say in the last year, I've paid more attention to him, watching him with Exeter Chiefs and with Scotland, and he gets through a mountain of work. He doesn't have a nasty edge, but he's your workhorse in there. Doesn't make that many errors and just keeps on churning up, clears out rucks, makes hits. you know, not a disruptive ball carrier, but he just has this massive engine. So just felt as though the stars were aligning. I thought England were going to, you know, sneak it in the end, you know, some sort of breakaway try because they have the capabilities with some of their talent, but very, very disappointing performance. I thought Farrell was well off the pace as well and should have been replaced much earlier. Yeah, just, you know, it was the beauty of Six Nations, because you come in a little undercooked, no crowd to spur you on, and then a team that just wants it a little bit more than you and kind of has higher energy than you is a bit of a sickener from an English perspective, but it throws the tournament right open, and that's why Six Nations is so great, and that's why it's so difficult to win the tournament. You think it's only five games, but each game is an absolute battle.
Yeah. So, final thoughts, big picture, this tournament's wide open. Ireland, obviously, if they want to be part of the conversation come March 20th, they now have to beat France effectively.
Yeah, well, of course, you're not going to win. You're not going to be in the mix with three victories. Someone will, of course, win four. I don't know. Is it going to be a Grand Slam year? I'm not so sure. It does feel like, you know, it's a must-win victory, but it depends on what way Andy Farrell goes. Does he, you know, try any new combinations, or does he stick with what he's got there? And the big question mark is obviously around 10. Does he, if Johnny doesn't play, does he stick with Billy Burns there, or does he bring in Ross Byrne, or is there a bolter? And it's unlikely. It's going to be one of those two guys if Johnny's not fit. But it's interesting to watch that space, because we're going to have to invest in that individual one way or another. There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course. The only good thing is there's lots of positives to have taken from it. So if they can churn a performance similar to that out against France this weekend with 15 players, they won't be far away from a victory.
Okay, very good. Brian O'Driscoll, thanks so much.
Cheers, Joe.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.